Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Jumping Monkeys would like to thank CashFly for the bandwidth for this podcast. CACHEFLY.com. CashFly. This is Jumping Monkeys with Megan Maroney and Leo Laporte. Episode 4 for June 23rd, 2007. Denise Howell. Well, there's our Jumping Monkeys theme, thanks to Paul Minshall and Megan's kids. Which kids are there?
That's all three, Milo, Huck, and Annabella.
Oh, they're
all
so cute.
All giggling there.
All giggling. And having a good time.
With, yes. Also some water play in there.
I thought I heard splashing.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Maroney, it's good to see you. It's good to see you all back again for another episode of Jumping Monkeys. This week, we're going to talk to another twit who happens to be a mom.
Yeah, Denise Howell is joining us to talk about her life as a techie and parent.
Yeah, she's, of course, the host of This Week in Law.
Yeah, do you call it Twill?
Twill, you bet.
Twill.
Twill.
Yeah, she's really smart and really interesting, and I'm excited to talk to her.
Yeah, she's neat. She's got a three-year-old son and has managed, I think, to do a very good job of juggling career and parenting.
Yeah.
And has, you know, several blogs, and she's very busy.
Yeah, writes for ZD.
Yep. So Denise will join us in a little bit, but before we do that, traditionally we like to look at some of the websites you've been looking at on the net having to do with parenting in the digital age.
Yes. The first one I wanted to talk about is a site called AnySoldier.com, and this is a site that a friend of mine in my mother's club showed me. It's a site you can go on and you can read what soldiers who are serving overseas in Iraq, Afghanistan, other places, what they're needing, and you can, you know, put a package together and mail it to them. So you're not just sending them, well, I think they might need extra socks and shaving cream. They actually tell you what they need. And the woman that told me about it, her company paid for shipping, which made it easy for us to send a ton of stuff. One thing, the reason why I'm specifically mentioning it here is I found on the site under cool things to send is Beanie Babies. So
really?
I bet you have Beanie Babies around
Lots
your house.
Of old
like your kids really
Beanie
were in
Babies.
The crazy Beanie Baby phase. Like,
what do they use them for?
They
though?
Put them in their packs and they hand them out to kids.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's neat.
So, yeah, just little stuffed animals that are no longer loved at your house, or that maybe they've come in and you think your kids already have enough. And that's what I sometimes do. Sometimes, unfortunately, my kids don't even see the gifts they get.
Right.
And
there's so much stuff.
Yeah. And we sent, and, you know, we got a letter back from them afterwards, a thank you, really nice letter. And they had also given some to an orphanage that is there. We sent them to some guys, some female and male soldiers in Iraq. And so if you have extra little stuffed animals sitting around, go to anysoldier.com. You can find a place. And if you work for a company that is looking for something charitable to do, ask them to
what
pay for
nice
the shipping
idea.
And
yeah. And that's an easy thing for them to do. You're doing all the work.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. They're just paying for it. And you know, there's another Parent Hacks also had they found hooked up with a woman who's in the Army Corps of Engineers. And she also will take stuffed animals and toys and all kinds of things, candy, school supplies. And we sent some stuff to her, too, and got a letter. And she really is.
That's neat. So you're really supporting the humanitarian side of the.
Yeah. I mean, and that's. Yeah. I mean, when you feel like, wow, there's nothing I can do and there's this, you know, war going on. There is something small that you can do to help, you know, some of the kids over there as well as the soldiers.
I was in the. The little mailboxes place we have over here, Maureen runs a little post office to go kind of thing, where and I do all my mailing there. And there's a picture of a woman in the infantry. She's a lieutenant. She actually is in command of a unit. And it was a picture of her and these four burly guys who are in her unit. And I said, well, to Maureen, who's this? She said, well, her dad comes in here and mails her packages all the time. And he was mailing a package. And I said, can we have a picture of her so we can think of her when we're sending those packages
That's
off
great.
To Iraq.
Yeah.
So a lot of a lot of our children really are out there, and that's a neat thing to do.
Yeah, one more note on anysoldier.com. I was recently looking on there, and they are actually struggling a little bit to keep the site up, so they also will take donations. So if it's something that, if you don't have time to actually collect stuff and send it, just helping the site run, helping them, you know, match you with soldiers would be a good help too.
That's great. Well, it's a successful site. They've had 7 million visitors over 3 years, so
yeah,
that costs money.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you also have an article here from the New York Times.
Yes.
About my daughter, the penguin. What is it? The penguin burger flipper?
The burger flipping penguin. This is a really interesting article about social networking sites for 8 to 12 year olds.
Oh.
Yeah.
Instead of MySpace, which really, you're not supposed to be on MySpace if you're under 13.
You mentioned that
Henry's too young to be on MySpace.
As was Abby when she signed up.
As was Abby.
But you know about it, which is means you're miles ahead of most parents. So.
Well, not only do I know about it, I look at their site and I tell them they have to have a private site, although even on MySpace, a private site isn't as private as you'd like it to be.
Yeah.
But I think I do a pretty good job of policing it.
Yeah. And I've talked to your kids. They're savvy about it. And
oh, they're very savvy.
Yeah. And I think when I talked to Abby about a year ago, she said MySpace wasn't even cool anymore.
No, she's done with it.
Yeah.
But Henry's still on it, the younger one.
Yeah. But this site is just it's a parent who wrote this article just kind of wanting to figure out what her daughter was doing on these sites, because she was actually coming home from school and immediately going on the site where she flipped burgers for a living. This was, I think, yes, Penguin, something, some site about penguins. But, you know, it's just, it's fascinating.
Clubpenguin.com.
Yeah, which is, it's a $5 subscription fee.
A month.
Yeah. And she was just flabbergasted by it, this parent, you know, who was a bit of a Luddite, I think. But, you know, it makes a good point.
Well, where's the kid getting the $6 a month to do this?
Her, I'm guessing.
Yeah. That's good. She should check into it.
But yeah, and Webkinz is another thing. My nephew, that's what he asked for Christmas, a Webkinz. And so I learned
about that. It's a stuffed animal. It starts as a stuffed animal.
Yes. You buy the stuffed animal in the store, and they have a little code around their neck, and they go to the site and they enter the code, and then they can earn money for the animal.
Not real money.
No.
Webkinz money.
No. But in this article, it's interesting because she actually, you know, is looking. She's like, what's that? What's that roulette wheel doing there?
Teach him to gamble.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it is. Sort of grooming kids for MySpace or for, you know, video games or online gambling. It's,
in a way, you know, you think these companies are being cynical. On the other hand, they're giving kids what kids want. They see their older siblings doing this, mm-hmm. and they want their own social sites.
Yeah. What it says in this article was she talked to a psychologist who said this gives kids more control than they have in their regular day-to-day 9-year-old life.
So you buy this Webkinz, you get the room, and you can furnish the room. You take care of your little animal. Mm-hmm. You give it a name. Mm-hmm. You're right. It's a very controlled environment. Nothing unexpected happens that you can't handle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if it were designed by people who are really thinking about what's best for the kid, it could be a wonderful chance to teach kids all sorts of valuable lessons. It could really be a better school than school is. I don't think it's being that well thought out.
I don't think it is. No, I'm interested to hear from parents who actually have kids who use these sites, because I'm just speaking.
Let me raise my hand, because Abby, when she was little, did
Neopets. Yeah, I remember very clearly her being very into the Neopets.
Addict.
I wonder how they're different now. Did she have chatting aspects in there? She was talking to friends.
She would chat a lot. That was her gateway to chatting.
Yeah.
It's kind of real time. Not exactly. It's not like a chat room, but it's kind of real time. And it was an early MySpace in some ways. It's famous as being a very, very sticky site that kids really would go to and spend a lot of time. You know what? It's interesting. She and some of her friends are back on Neopets.
Really?
There's a retro thing going on.
Yeah.
The teenagers are going back to Neopets.
That. Interesting.
Yeah. So there is something going on there. It's very social. It is gambling. You're not gambling for real money, but you're earning points.
Right.
And you can have a store. She learned HTML on Neopets.
Really?
She wanted it. Well, she just like MySpace, she wanted to customize the Neopets page, and she wanted to learn HTML.
Yeah, I don't know if this is as high tech as that, but
I'm sure it's not.
Yeah,
that was kind of hard to use.
Just interesting. I mean, that, you know, this woman was clearly like paying for this service before she really understood what was going on. But it's pretty funny.
There's some other ones. IMB.
Yeah, and that's free, but then you have to put your credit card in, I guess.
Yville, which has advertising. See, in a way, I'd almost prefer to pay than have them be advertised to, right?
Oh, yeah, me too. And then there's the Nicktropolis, which...
Is that Nickelodeon?
Yes. Yeah. So it's basically... I think it might be free, but it's also, you know, they're pushing you SpongeBob on you.
The roulette wheel.
Yeah, that I was surprised about that. Because, yeah, just using it to get money for... So she could buy a banana bed, I think. A banana couch.
Yeah, okay. For her penguin. The burger flipper.
So, yeah, interesting. I don't know.
What a world we live in. I don't know what to make of any of this stuff, to be honest with you. I really don't.
I don't either. But I am interested in hearing from people about what they think about their kids using these sites. Because right. I might just be, you know, they might be great.
Right. Poe Bronson writes an article also, actually this is New York Magazine, about how not to talk to your kids. I thought this was quite interesting.
It is. I mean, I've been hearing about the, you know, how parents have been overpraising their kids for a long time. And I really found this fascinating. They did some research where they took some public school students, brought them in and gave them all a test, like an IQ test. And when they were done, they told one group, "You're really smart. You did you did really well. You were really smart." And they told the other group, "You did really well. You must have tried very hard."
Uh-huh.
And then they offered, "Okay, you can take the same test or you can take a harder test." And the people that they said, "You did really well. You must be really smart," chose to take the same test. Whereas the kids who were told, "You did really well. You must have tried very hard," took the harder test. And then when they did another test after that, the third test, the kids who were again told, "You're really smart," did worse than the kids who were told. So I think that's really interesting. It makes sense
because a kid's trying to please the adult, right? So if the adult is basically saying to the kid, I'm valuing you because you try hard, the kid's going to try hard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm valuing you because you scored well and you're really smart, the kid's going to do whatever he can to score the same, repeat the experience.
That makes sense to me. It does make sense. I thought it was interesting in terms of, you know, this praising or overpraising has been going on a long time. And it's interesting to think of it in terms of...
It's what you praise them for.
Right. Yeah, it's how you praise them, right. I think. But
if you praise somebody for working hard, they want to continue to work hard.
Right, right.
If you praise them for an innate ability, there's nothing they can do.
That's true.
I'm done.
Yeah. There's also that same kind of study. There was a study recently about kids who think you're either smart or you're not smart.
Right.
And you can't change that.
Right.
And, you know, really you
My
should tell kids.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. Kids that, you know, you can, if you don't seem to be doing well in school now, you can change that. You know, you can, you're not like, it's not like you're born smart.
That's good. I'm going to try that with Henry. Henry's struggling right now. We just put him into a remedial program. He's very bright. It's interesting that the school counselor said to him, and she told us this as well, in some regards, he's smarter than a 26-year-old. He's in reading, for instance, he's 95th percentile. He's at reading and comprehension and spelling. At organization, he's a nine-year-old. He's a third grader.
I'm looking at your office right now, and I have to say that doesn't surprise me.
There's a family trait there.
Every day, every week when I come in, I have to sort of dig my way through.
It's not that bad, is it?
No, it's not that bad now that your taxes are done. That big giant pile is gone.
Well, they're not done. That's that big giant pile. They're just kind of sort of done.
You know they were due already.
Yeah, right? I sent them a lot of money. I figured that'll keep them quiet for a while.
But no, I was thinking of this overpraise thing in terms of blogs and other kinds of sites like Jaiku or Flickr or Twitter or any of those sites where you're constantly telling people, showing people your life, what you're doing, the tiniest things, like, you know, what you're having for lunch or what you're watching on television. I'm thinking maybe that had something to do, like, you know, us this of this generation, we've been praised. Our parents have always been telling us how important we are.
Looking for
more praise or just like
we're
thinking.
Just a bunch of narcissists is what you're saying.
Exactly. And,
and that's why we do a podcast.
Yes, because my mom told me that what I do is interesting, no matter what it is.
Right.
Yeah, I just think that's fascinating because, sure, the technology of Jaiku wasn't there before, but I don't know. It just, we weren't broadcasting what we were doing all the time in the other ways we had.
Well, I think it's always been true in the arts, for instance, that the people who are artists and performers are either people who were praised for that or people who didn't get enough praise for that and are still trying to earn that praise. But there is a mindset, and I fully admit to having it, where you think, well, what I do is somebody must be interested in it and I'm going to do it. And thank goodness that there are people who feel that way. We wouldn't have performers and artists and writers and musicians if some people didn't feel like, well, I'm just going to do what I do, and I think people will like it.
Yeah. I mean, people are interested in what you're doing, and for a good reason. But I'm talking about the random everyday person who posts.
Well, you know what saved me? I'm just as narcissistic and ego-driven as the worst blogger. But what saved me was somehow I got in my mind early on that I had to give people content and value.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, maybe that's something I got from my parents. Maybe they communicated to me, and I think this is a very important communication. I know you do this with your kids. You have a job to do,
mm-hmm.
that you have an obligation to society to give something to society.
Right.
That it's not merely look at me. It's, hey, let me communicate something. Let me help you. Let me teach you. Let me give you something of value.
Right.
Let me donate my time. Let me serve you. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the way I feel. I mean, I constantly ask myself, like, why do I have a blog? None of my really close friends have a blog, and they often ask me, why do you do this? Like, what are you just, you know, you think people are just constantly interested in what you have to say? And I don't know. I mean, partly, you know, I'm a writer. I've always wanted to write. Right. That's what I enjoy doing. So I think, you know, it's an expression in some ways, and I would hope that I'm helping people in some way, but.
Well, I think I remember the first time I started blogging, I thought, this is the most inane, narcissistic, self-involved thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And I was very self-conscious about it. It's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
And you get over that quickly.
Right.
But some people do, some people don't, and they stop blogging, right?
Right.
And I think that, you know, I guess one of my core values is that we all have something to say. And that, in fact, the only thing we really have to contribute is our unique point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what art is about. That's what communicating is about. That's what writing or whatever. It's right. Communicating your unique point of view.
And I mean, I think the interesting thing about blogs is you're not pushing that. Same with podcasts. You're not pushing that
Nobody
on
has
anyone.
To listen.
Yeah, they come to you if they want to. It's interesting.
Right. But I think you're right. I mean, it's fun. And there is a narcissistic component to it. There's
no question
about it.
Yeah.
I'm humbled now. I'm going to go work for the orphans.
Well, I wasn't directing that at you. This isn't an intervention,
no, but
Leo.
As all parents, we're constantly, this is something, and if you're not a parent and you're listening, you're going, what are they so worried about? But if you're a parent, this is a constant dialogue you have with yourself. What should I be saying to my kids
right.
to give them the best advantage, to make them, you know, and I think one thing you learn is there's nothing you can do.
Right.
It's too late.
Yeah.
And yet there are things you can do that are really horrendously wrong and bad. And you constantly feel like, God, I just don't want to screw my kids
yeah,
up.
Yeah. You can actively try to not be a bad parent.
I do.
Yeah.
I think I fail. I often feel like I frequently will wake up 3 a.m. thinking I'm a bad parent.
Right.
Because I didn't stay up till 11 last night working with Henry on his project
right.
or whatever.
But, you know, you can no longer have to feel like you're a bad parent for not telling your kids they're smart.
No, I'm going to tell him he worked hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that makes sense.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting stuff.
Now, if you don't want to work hard, just get somebody to do your stuff for
yes,
you.
Exactly. This is domystuff.com.
Where do I sign up?
You're already on the login page.
Oh.
Now, this is, I feel like I have heard of this a long time ago, but I don't know. I just recently, my husband actually told me about it. It's how to outsource anything, basically. You go on this site and you log in and you say, like, I need someone to clean my bathroom, or I need someone to
really?
Paint my
anything.
Fence. Or yes, go on there. There was someone was cleaning my bathroom. And look, yeah, there's a picture of a woman with gloves cleaning. And then people
and
will bid on
happy.
What they'll, you know, what they want to be paid for that. And you
so it
choose.
Could be chores.
And,
it could be picking up my dry cleaning. It could be editing my podcast. It could be anything.
Right. I looked on there to see, like, take
podcast?
Care of my kids. I don't think they actually have, like, anyone that
probably
can take care of your kids.
Probably wouldn't want to go on here.
But you would better, but then have someone clean your bathroom so you can spend more time with your kids. That's what I think is interesting.
Now, it's early days, so they're not yet a lot of people looking for work and a lot of people looking for
stuff. Yeah.
Stuff
yeah. There
done.
Wasn't a lot of people bidding.
But that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So, there was, I think that my husband heard this on NPR. Someone had posted a breakup with my girlfriend.
For me?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah.
Hello. Is this Denise? Hi, Denise. My name is Leo Laporte. You don't know me, but your boyfriend has asked me to tell you that he wants to break up with you.
And he paid me $50
to do it. And he found me on the web. And you know, the nice thing about that is you're just kind of, you don't have any, you know, no investment.
Yeah.
That, you know,
How much would you do? We should ask people.
I'd do that for $50.
$50?
I would do that. I would do that all day for $50 because I could take about 5 minutes.
Would you do it for $20?
Well, let's see. I could do 10 an hour. It's $200 an hour. No, I'd need $50, but $50 is $500 an hour.
All right.
That's
anybody,
not bad.
Anyone need?
I'm going to go sign up right now.
Yeah.
I'll break up with your girlfriend for you. And I'll do it so that she'll feel good about herself afterwards. You know, you worked hard on this relationship.
Yeah. Or just tell her she's smart.
You're smart.
Move on. Yeah.
Move on. What is it they say? There's another bus coming in every 15 minutes. There
are
plenty of fish in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he just wants to be friends.
Right. So domystuff.com. I'm interested in following this. I need some stuff done.
I think it's a good
idea. I need someone to wash the crayon off my wall constantly, all day, every day.
Goo gone. Goo be gone.
No, you know, actually, this is totally a tangent about the color, but Mr. Clean Magic Eraser. I was thinking about that. I need to mention.
Stuff.
Have you used that?
No.
I don't know what it is, and someone emailed me
toxic.
If it's poisonous.
Yeah.
But it takes crayon off everything. I mean,
really?
And marker takes everything.
It's industrial solvent.
Not cloth or anything, but yeah, I mean, it's magic, Leo. Don't throw this industrial solvent stuff on me. It's just magic.
Gooby Gone works really well, too. I don't know if Gooby Gone would work on a crayon on the wall. I think my sense is it would be. It'd be good for. Okay, look at. See this?
Oh, you have something stuck to your laptop.
See this? This is terrible. I had a sticker on my laptop, right? I had a bumper sticker that said Chicks Dig Podcasters, and then I realized it wasn't true. So I peeled it off because it was kind of starting to be embarrassing.
Uh-huh.
Because chicks don't really dig podcasting. And then, but see, now the goo is left behind. So Goo Be Gone would get rid of that.
Yeah.
It's good for, it's eliminating goo. But I don't know if it would work with wax. It might.
Oh, we don't deal with a lot of goo in our house.
You don't?
Mostly just crayon. Oh, I guess.
No. Oh, come now.
Yeah, that's true.
Come now. I'm sure there's goo in your home.
Yeah.
Moving along to colors.
Okay. I know I talk about Flickr every week and I've become a broken
Flickr is the multi-purpose do-everything website.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about the same thing. We've talked about how I show my kids airplanes and fire trucks and just random pictures of things.
Now what can you do?
I've been teaching Milo and Huck colors with Flickr because there are groups. I love the groups. So you can go on.
This is so cool. And, this is the red group.
Yeah, the red group. We'll put the link in the show notes, but it's the group is called Red Rule and it's all pictures with red in it. So it's just interesting because at this point they're really funny. Like you'll show them something green and it's best to, if you want to, you know, if I want to show them off, I just show them something green and say, what color is this? Because they say green.
This is like you'd go out and buy a pixie. See, now somebody should not have put this in here. Because this
red.
Is not red enough.
Well, there's some red in there. You can point. Yeah, this is
but
the
see,
red.
See, that's a red Ferrari.
Yeah, red. Yeah.
That is red.
Yeah.
And I think that this is great.
Yeah.
This is like you'd go buy a picture book for this.
Right, yeah.
But you don't have to because this is red.
And they love the computer. And then, yeah, there's a red-faced man. And
a red cup.
Yeah, it's very cool. There's also blue group. There's yellow.
There's blue group?
Yeah, it's blue.
Oh, it's blue. So blue. It's so pretty.
Blue.
It's very blue.
Yeah.
Now, there are tools that you can use. There's software tools that you can say, this is a color, and I want to find all the pictures on Flickr that have predominantly this shade.
Oh, yeah?
So, yeah, there's a program that'll do that. I can't remember where. We had it on Call for Help, I think. But anyway.
Cool.
But why do you don't need that anymore? Because here's the blue group.
Yeah.
Wow. Blue sky? You know, there's only 13 photos in the blue group.
Really?
And one of them's really red.
No, 13 in that blue?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm out of the group. I'm in somebody's pictures.
Oh.
I see what happened. I clicked a link that took me to her pictures.
Have you ever heard of this Flickr?
Flickr? Blue? What is this thing called Flickr?
Just kidding.
Look, it's so blue.
Yeah, no. I only deal with groups that have over 1,500 members or pictures in them. But it's just so great because you can go. I mean, it's like it's different every time.
Really, that's Megan's rule.
Yes, that's Megan's rule.
1,500
no,
I'm
just kidding. But you know, but then you can go on each time and you look. We make full screen slideshow and we watch it, and then
they
love it. And then
are they learning their colors?
Yeah. And they, you know, they start to get tired, and then they punch the screen, but or bang on the keys. It's not my laptop, so what do I care?
Who cares?
Plus, it's not a Mac, so, you know.
Yeah, that's what Windows was made for.
Yeah.
That's a very good idea, though. I mean, I imagine there's other things you could do with Flickr.
Oh, yeah, words. And,
words,
I mean, yeah, if you could
numbers,
just, like, random. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Using the tags, you can search for the number 9.
Yeah.
Wow, what a good idea.
Yeah. Have you heard of this day, 24 hours with Flickr thing?
No.
It's tomorrow, which by the time you hear this, will already be gone. But
8 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, the way we're going, Lee, a year ago. But yeah, they're encouraging everyone on May 5th to take pictures. But, you know, you can, if you're listening to this now, you don't have to send the May 5th. If you took pictures on May 5th, you can send them in. It's 24 hours with Flickr. I don't have the URL for you, but you can probably find
it. So it's like a day in the life, those great day in the life books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, that's the look. This was this day in the life books are so great. And we had them on screensavers, remember? Mm-hmm. And it was just a neat idea. And now Flickr, it's like big deal. You know, we'll just pick a day.
Yeah.
Okay. That day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the day.
Yeah.
Every picture on here that day.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why they picked May 5th. I'm sure they have a reason.
Well, you know, we're doing this on May 4th, and this is Star Wars Day.
Oh.
May the 4th be with you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Randall Schwartz told me that.
Nice.
Okay. I'm gonna go back to Flickr now.
Okay.
I just posted a picture.
You did?
Yeah. With my new camera phone. I post pictures all the time. That's the lunch I left to do this podcast.
Oh, they were still there?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So what I'll do is I'll look at the picture and think about having lunch.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. They're gone. Bloggers Choice Awards. And now they have two kinds of blogs that you might be interested in, daddies and mommies.
Well, yeah, I was interested in the fact that none of the blogs are judged by like looks, except for there's the hottest daddy blogger and hottest mommy blogger.
Oh,
I found that there's not just hottest blogger.
It's not the blog that's hot. It's the
person
doing the blog, the blogger.
Yeah. I thought it was hot as in looks, but maybe it's hot as in
hot.
Just
well, like
popular.
Neil Gaiman is both cute and hot.
Yeah. I think it's hottest because it's not blog, it's blogger. But yeah, you can look at it anyway, but I looked at it as in like,
cute.
Hey, look, he's hot.
He's
Neil
hot.
Gaiman, hot.
Neil Gaiman, hot. Dad gone mad.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Just the name is good.
So I'm submitting Leo to the hottest daddy blogger section, and
I'm
I want everyone to vote for him.
I'm not
you
a daddy
post
blogger.
Pictures of your kids.
Oh,
you
I guess so.
Co-host a parenting podcast.
Oh, I count. I qualify now.
Yeah, you are nominated
baby.
For best podcast.
Well, if
by
you're
going to
do that, nominated on what? On this?
Yeah. You know, I don't know what the deal is with the Bloggers Choice Awards, but, you know, as we just discussed, I have some ego, so I searched, and someone did nominate me for Hottest Mommy Blogger.
Winners will be announced November 10th at PostyCon.
Yeah.
In Las Vegas. I don't even know what PostyCon is.
I don't know what that is either, but
wow.
I like it.
Wow.
PostyCon.
Bloggers Choice Awards. So I'm on here, huh?
Yeah, I am too, so, but no one's voted for me, but that's okay.
What are you, so, Jumping Monkeys?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It only takes one person.
I'm gonna vote. It only takes one person to vote?
No, to nominate you.
Oh. Well, I don't see you here. Do I have to log in?
Search for the URL.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jumping Monkey or Monkeys?
Monkeys. Jumping Monkey is a porn site. Don't
is
go there.
Is it really?
Yes.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I know.
So close and yet so different. Here it is.
Yeah.
Choose a category to view this blog. Best parenting blog or you're in the hottest mommy blog. Oh, I'm voting for you as hottest mommy. There we go. Oh, I got to log in.
Oh,
to do that.
No.
Well, that's it for that.
I kind of like that I have zero
like you,
votes.
But
I like that I have zero votes.
That's so cool that you're in a hottest mommy blog.
You've also been nominated
but
for
not as
best
a hottest,
podcast.
Yeah,
no,
best podcast.
But I'm going to nominate you for hottest daddy blogger.
I have to see now. So does this show who's getting the most votes? Oh, look at Keith and the girl and Dawn and
there
Drew
you
are like
number
whooping
three.
Us.
You're number three.
You better not even know it.
I know. Well, now you know it.
Okay,
and,
everybody.
Spread the good
go
word.
Go vote on the bloggerschoiceawards.com for twit.tv because we're coming in third to Keith and the Girl. And you know that's only because Keith and the Girl begged.
Right. We're not begging. We're just slyly mentioning it.
Just slipping it in. All right. Bloggers Choice Awards. And that's good. And I don't know what the PostyCon is.
I don't either.
I do know that there is a blogger convention like and a podcasting convention like 2 days before that in Vegas. So maybe I'll be at PostyCon too.
Maybe you can accept my hottest blogger.
November 8th and 9th is the, I wonder if this is related. PostyCon is November 10th. How could there be two blogger conventions, one right after the other?
There couldn't be.
Let's wrap it up because I want to get Denise Howell on here.
Okay.
Squibbles.
Squibbles. This is an interesting site. It's kind of like a dig for kids.
Great.
You submit.
I thought dig was for kids.
A dig.
Dig for little kids.
Little kids who, not not a dig for people who just act
Labels
like kids.
Is a community which allows parents and teachers to share links to the best places on the internet for kids of any age. So the parents are, or adults are voting.
Right. Yeah. Oh, it's not
the
for,
sites
yeah,
are for
it's,
kids.
Yes. Sorry.
Look,
yeah.
Look, airplanes and airports on Flickr.
That's me. I submitted that. I am a Squibbles
sure
member.
Did. You sure
I did.
Did. Dumping, yes. Jumping monkeys.
Mm-hmm. There's other people besides me submitting this. It's not just
this
me.
This is great.
Yeah, it's
Jack
my
Prelutsky.
School.
I love him.
Yeah, Michael Bosco
did this. Great.
I think he just started it on his own because he just collected the links that his kids liked. And then he started this site. And I've looked at a lot of them. They're really, I mean, you know, the reason it's like Dig is that it's user submitted and then people vote and they, you know, the most popular ones go to the top.
This is a good idea. This is a good use of the Dig paradigm.
It is. It's not. Yeah. Because, I mean, if you search for kid sites, what you're going to come up with on Google is going to be, you know, sites with tons of,
right.
You know.
You know what I like here is they've got it also divided by age group. Did you mention that? Baby, toddler, preschool, elementary,
that,
and teenager.
Yeah. So it's not hugely popular right now, but I think.
It's going to be now.
Yes.
Squibbles.com.
No, it's mysquibbles.com.
Don't tell me. The other one's a porn site.
It's not a porn site. It's a web design site.
Okay.
MySquibbles.com.
Free website for your school or class. That's good. I'm looking at the teenagers one. Downloadable, printable games and activities. How to email newsletters to students' parents. ADHD behavior. Let's go ride bikes. Oh, I'm sorry. Teachervision.com. This is very good. This
yeah,
is very good.
It's an interesting site. You just made, you know, created by a dad.
Vegan lunchbox. You know about that one.
Oh, yeah.
We were talking about that.
I do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Look at there it is.
Yep.
Jennifer Schmoo.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's say hi to Denise Howell, because she's so great, and she's been waiting in the wings while we've been blathering.
Trying to get people to vote for us.
Vote for us! We're not narcissists. Denise Howell is an attorney. She is a specialist in intellectual property law and is a mommy of a three-year-old named Tyler. And she also hosts This Week in Law and a number of blogs. She's really quite prolific, and we thought it would be fun to talk to her and say, I guess we should start by talking about your career before you had a kid.
Sure.
Because you worked for a firm.
Yes, I did. I worked for, 7 years with a big international law firm that was called Reed Smith. And then 7 years prior to that with a small litigation boutique here in Orange County where I live.
Was it tech law then or?
I was doing a lot of, tech law-oriented stuff at Reed Smith with our intellectual property and e-commerce lawyers, as they call them there at that firm. But at my prior firm, I wasn't doing so much tech law as business litigation and tech support for the law firm.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
The one person who knows anything about computers, well, I guess you've got a job.
Yeah.
Right. Getting our Lexus modems to work way back in the day.
Wow.
That kind of thing.
Getting those word-perfect macros.
Yes,
for the pleadings.
Yes.
I got a template.
Right. So, you know, you start monkeying around with technology in your personal and professional life, and pretty much it starts to take over. And
it began
to do that with my professional life.
And then your son is how old?
He's 3 and a half almost.
Aww.
Wow. So did you go back to the firm after you had him?
I did. I took a nice long maternity leave. You know, in California, we're really fortunate because we can take up to 7 months and still keep our jobs.
Yeah.
So I did that. And
you did that, Megan.
The first time I didn't.
You stuck around.
They passed a new law. You probably know more about this, Denise, being that you're a lawyer. I think after I had Annabella, she's 4. And I think it was shortly after they passed the FMLA or the part of the FMLA that was, I think it was 6 months. When I had her, I may be wrong. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Tech TV convinced me it was 6 months and convinced me at 4 months
to come back. Yeah.
That it would be a good idea for me to come back now. But then the second time around, I took 6 months off.
So you got you said 7 months, Denise?
Yeah, I took seven months when I had Tyler,
nice.
You know, a few of which on the front end were paid leave, which was nice. But, you know, that really is a great ability to spend some time with your little guy. And then my firm was really wonderful when I came back about being flexible in both how many days I was physically in the office and how many hours I needed to be working. So I came back on a part-time basis when I did come back, But still, I mean, making the part-time thing work in a big law firm, or I think a big company of any kind, is a really complicated equation. Oh, and yeah. I did it for two and a half years, I guess, almost. Wow. And you know, finally it was clear it just wasn't working out for anybody. So went on my own after that, very, very part-time as far as practice of law goes. And then, you know, the podcasts I do and the blogs that I write sort of fill in catch as catch can whenever I get an hour of free time, and mostly doing mommy stuff.
Wow, that's nice.
I guess the difference is that from earlier years is that you have the opportunity while you're doing mommy stuff. You do this too, Megan, to actually work without leaving the home.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little bit of brain stimulus, which is must be nice.
It's really nice.
So do you have an office in your home or do you go somewhere?
I do. That's where I am right now. And I'm sitting here in front of the huge mixer that Leo helped me pick out and purchase, which I always get a huge kick whenever I come in and turn it on and use it like I am right now. Not
the
just because
dim.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Our power goes shaky for a minute. And no, because my son always comes into my office and the mixer is just fascinating to
him.
I
bet.
He always comes and like spins the dials and pushes the buttons.
Oh, I bet.
And whenever I turn it on, it's just lit up like a Christmas tree because of all the buttons he's pushed.
It's the world's best busy box.
Yes.
It's perfect.
Exactly.
So cool.
So he wants to grow up to be a lawyer so he can have a big mixer like that too, right?
That's right.
I want to have a podcast just like mommy. I guess he's too young really to know what you're doing with this mixer.
Oh, well, he totally knows what podcasts are.
Really?
In fact, I stuck a little blog note up about that recently because I thought it was so funny that Tyler talks all the time about podcasts, but if you asked him what a broadcast was, he wouldn't have a clue.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Wow.
So does he listen? Does he have podcasts that he likes to listen to?
Yeah, we listen to the Story Nori cast.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
I like that one.
She reads. It's a British woman. She makes up those stories, right? I mean, they're not.
No, she reads like classic fairy tales and things too.
Neat.
And I think they were doing
wonderful
installments of Alice in Wonderland. Most of it is way over his head, and some of it is much too dark for him. But,
yeah,
you know.
But he doesn't know that it's a podcast. I mean, it's just something coming out of the speakers, right? I mean, does he know you get it on the internet?
What really cracks it up? No, I'm generally driving around with him somewhere, and I have my iPod plugged into the car. And so we listen to, we found a great music podcast recently. What is it called? It's from some small public radio station in Massachusetts. And it's all kids music, and it's like an hour and a half long. And they do such a great job with it. I stuck it on Bag and Baggage. Again, there's a link to it there, but I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called. But gosh, they have great music. And that really drove home for me. That's the first music podcast I've started consistently listening to. And it really drove home for me what an effective music sales vehicle these things are.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you can really hone in on an interest of yours that is much more specific than the kind of music that you could get on conventional radio.
Is this Valley Free Radio? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think that's what it's
Spare
called.
Spare the rock and spoil the child.
That's
I
it.
Love the name.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's fantastic.
So I can't wait.
Princess Katie and Racer Steve. I love it.
They're awesome. So we just connected up the Apple TV. And, you know, the first thing I did for Tyler once we got that running was download a ton of stuff that we had listened to from that podcast.
Oh, does he watch any video podcasts?
We have watched the Wow Wow Websy podcast before, video podcast, which is really cute. But I try and keep him off of TV and video as much as possible.
Yeah.
For a long time, I was just kind of letting him watch stuff willy-nilly, and he really started to get addicted. Like, he would get up in the morning, plop down on the couch, and demand his Bob the Builder. you know, without even looking outside to see what kind of day it was.
They really do that. It's kind of scary.
Yeah.
How quickly that happens.
Yeah. I was reading something recently about the Baby Einstein videos that my daughter watched a little bit of those before I kind of realized that someone was trying to sell me a bill of goods with them. But
Baby heroin, more life.
Yeah. But, you know, you hear parents say, like, oh, it just mesmerizes my child. Like, it's a good thing. But there was some research recently that some babies, they think, actually go into a low-level seizure state when they're watching it. That's why they...
Oh, that's why we like it.
Yeah.
We're zoned out. We're having seizures.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, especially if you're a working mom and you're working at home, you do what you got to do, and sometimes that means the TV babysitter, and I feel like that's okay.
Yeah, every now and then you just have no alternative but to flick the thing on.
Yeah, but actually, I think a real babysitter is better.
Yeah, let the real babysitter put your kid in front of the TV. There's no guilt involved. Yeah.
Yeah, that I think the hardest part about it when we lowered the boom on TV on Tyler was that our nanny was no longer allowed to do that.
Yeah, she didn't like that one bit.
No.
She got to work. Did you had you been doing Bag and Baggage before Tyler was born?
Yes.
So that was something you started while you were in law, working in law.
Yes, exactly. It was my very first blog, the very first thing I ever messed around with on Blogger in 2001, and it's still alive
great blog.
And kicking.
Classic blog, one of the greats.
Where does the name come from, Bag and Baggage?
It's from Shakespeare. It's from, I think, a couple of different Shakespeare plays.
And right after Kill All the Lawyers, then Bag and Baggage. Yeah.
Right. It sort of means you and all your stuff, just how it sounds.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
And have you kept it? I mean, obviously you have. Has it been hard to keep doing it with Tyler or around, or does that give you inspiration?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything in my life has always given me inspiration to post, to be a blogger, you know? I mean, I've always looked at blogging as an opportunity to put something up that interests you or amazes you or, you know, that you have questions about. And so with Tyler, you know, that probably goes into overdrive, all of the things that I potentially want to talk about with the world. Of course, it's the time that's always an issue.
Well, I remember watching you at the podcast expo at the seminar there, blogging as you're listening to the speeches. I mean, you clearly enjoy it and you have stuff to say, and you just do it. When you have something to say, you do it.
Right. But I've never put myself on a timetable and said must post X times a day or even X times a week. It's always been something that, you know, I've treated as a labor of love and something that, you know, it's only any good if it's something I'm really interested and motivated in putting up there.
Right. Gosh knows there's plenty to say these days.
Yeah.
An endless amount. Unlike some parents, your blog didn't go baby blog.
No, although Bag and Baggage sure has gone more that direction since it was about August last year. I started writing a blog for ZDNet that's called Logarithms, LAWG. And I tend to put a lot of my legal commentary and discussion up there nowadays. As opposed to on Bag and Baggage, simply to have something to put there. You know, I mean, again, it's one of those time situations.
Right.
That if I had a whole lot more time on my hands, I'd be putting stuff on the 6 different blogs that I have posting privileges on. But now I have to kind of decide what goes where.
Do you have a Tumble log too now?
No, I haven't done that just
okay,
for,
don't.
You know, again, something else
Stop.
I don't mean.
Whatever
Good, thank you,
do. You. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to bring it up. Forget I said anything. So what is you think Tyler's relationship to technology, besides the fact that he listens to podcasts? I mean, that's no different than listening to any audio, really.
Right. Well, so far, you know, as I said, we're really trying to limit his screen time while
Good.
He's young.
Yep.
But, you know, I realize that is going to become impossible as time goes on. And you know, don't want to be one of those parents that is the ogre about TV and the computer, but I think you have to be really involved and really rational about making sure that there are limits.
The good news is technology is giving us tools that we never had before. We've talked about this before on the show, that TiVo lets you choose the shows. Of course, there's always something on now,
right?
But it lets you choose and eliminate the commercials. We were talking at lunch. I was talking. I had lunch with some dads. And one of them is the parent of a 6th grader, as I am. And he and I have taken very different paths. We both work in technology. And I allowed my 6th graders to chat with some limitations. In fact, eventually I had to say you can only chat in certain after homework hours stuff. I had to limit the hours. But he's actually, he removed iChat from the computer. And I said, but, you know, Dave, that's kind of your kid's social life.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I just spent a week, sort of a girl's vacation week with a girlfriend of mine from college and her two kids who are older than Tyler. They're 8 and 11. And her 11-year-old is completely into this game called RuneScape.
Uh-oh. Oh, yeah, that's an old game. Uh-oh. I remember that.
Yeah, no, he's, and the 8-year-old even plays. And they were thrilled because at both of our houses, they came and spent a night at the house where we live in full time. And then we have a vacation home, and that's where we ran off and spent the week. And in both places, there are two internet connected computers. So both the kids figured out rapidly that they could be online together at the same time. Uh-oh. And they could jump into RuneScape and play the game, you know, side by side.
Yeah, as far as like video games go, that's a pretty tame one, I think. And you know,
it's about the time though that they spend, and it's about what they're doing instead of outside playing and getting tactile. They're kind of stuck in front of the screen in this kind of non-tactile environment. That worries me, maybe because I'm an older guy. I just worry more. My little nephew, actually, I guess he's a cousin, and he's only about 5 or 6, is hooked onto Toontown, which is basically RuneScape or World of Warcraft for little kids. Mm. It's Disney's way to get you started, I think. It's a gateway drug.
Oh, yeah. And they have Webkinz. Have you heard of those?
Yeah.
Little, it's like a stuffed animal you buy. And then
that's another one.
Yeah. And then you put a code in and you fill it out. And it's like,
that's the Tamagotchi style.
Yes.
Where you're kind of, this Webkinz has online a home and you have to feed him everything. And then Toontown is very much like World of Warcraft, where you're going on quests. There's no violence, except it's kind of this violent, you know?
Yeah.
Kids love it, and they get very hooked into it. And I worry that, don't you worry that they're not getting the sensory, the full sensorium, that they're just kind of really just looking at a screen and imagining it?
Even my friend with her two kids who were so into this game, you know, was only letting them play at such volume because they were on vacation and that she really limits them. I don't think they get to play during the week at all, only on weekends at home and then only for like an hour each day.
But see, then Dvorak says, yeah, but that's by doing that, you create a demand.
Right.
His position is you let your kids do it all they want, they get sick of it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about television. I grew up with being able to watch as much television as I wanted. I mean, as we discussed before, you couldn't watch 24 hours a day of television because there was like an hour of Sesame Street and an hour of Electra Company, and that was it. But, I mean, my husband was very limited, and now he is much more into television than I am. And not only that, his mom also put certain limits on it, like, you know, if you can watch a show if you read a book kind of thing. And so I don't know, that created all kinds of different feelings for him about reading and watching TV. So yeah, I don't know. It's tough, but I think it's interesting because I mean, you know, we're talking about video games have been around for a long time. Like there are certainly people in the adult world who played a lot of video games when they were young, but now I think it's just becoming much, much more widespread because there's this whole social networking aspect of it, not just with MySpace, but I mean, there's the Webkinz and those other things where you actually get to chat with your friends when you're, you know, starting at 7, 6 years old.
Right. And that was the whole point of the attraction for these two kids I was with, was they were in the chat the whole time, you know, playing the game is one thing. And the older kid especially was very interested in leveling up. But it was, you know, amazing. All of a sudden, you know, they never leave their friends behind. Their friends are online and they're online and they're somewhere remote on vacation, but they're all in touch.
But even when they're home, they do that.
Yeah.
When they could go out in the street and their kids, the friends would be there.
Mm-hmm.
I really worry that, you know, it's funny. These conversations have been going on probably with parents for millennia, right? In different, you know, for instance, there's the drug question, you know, and my generation says to our teenagers, well, it was a lot stronger back then, right? And so you shouldn't be doing it. And it's the same thing. Well, the video games were much more intense nowadays than they were. And you shouldn't be doing it. I do think in a way that these companies, big companies like Disney, they're trying to create sticky websites. And the way they do it is by creating these very compelling games, even for really little kids. And in many ways, they're teaching these kids, they're creating a whole generation of people who will be playing the next generation of World of Warcraft or whatever it is.
Yeah. I was at the Video on the Net conference in San Jose, end of March, which was a really great event. And Jeff Pulver, who puts that on in his, you know, keynote address for the whole conference, made the big point that I think he said he had twin 13-year-olds.
Jeff's an old timer like me.
Yeah. He was so despondent that he could not interest them in doing things like building model airplanes.
Right. That's gone.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't, with a 3.5-year-old, I'm sort of staring down, how do you fend that off? And I'm not sure I've figured that out yet. Right now, Tyler would be very into building a model airplane. So, you know, I don't know how you preserve that.
Well, it sounds like limiting, you know, the screen time is good. I mean, I think putting the computer out in the public place, those kinds of things.
But again,
help.
Dvorak says, oh, no, not, of course, this is Dvorak. Don't do that. Just let them do it all they want. My sons are very good drivers because they drove all the time on video games.
Right. Hopefully not in Grand Theft Auto.
Yes, absolutely Grand Theft Auto. He doesn't care. He says, they know better. They're not going to go beat up hookers in their real life. This is a game. And, you know, I can't. We don't know.
Yeah,
this
we don't
new.
Know.
This is all new. We don't know what's right.
That is true. Yeah, I agree. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to. I don't. But I think that's why some of the complaints are misguided. I mean, I think, you know, we're not exactly saying, oh, well, they're going to, you know, beat up hookers in real life.
Right.
What we're saying is it just they should be playing outside. You know, it doesn't
right.
really matter what they're doing on the Internet or watching TV. It'd be better if they were outside.
My wife is somewhat of a Luddite, so she will fall in the direction of less screen time, less online, more outside, much more so than I will.
Yeah. I think, I mean, it's the same thing with all these kids' websites. I think parents, what they're pushing is, oh, we're safe for kids because, you know, adults can't get on here. You know, it's not like, you know, these sites for 8-year-olds are not like MySpace. They're not dangerous. You're not going to meet predators on them. They're all safe. And so parents are thinking, okay, great, they're safe. You know, my kids are safe, but they're not necessarily safe from the advertising or safe from just the computer addiction. And I think you get sort of distracted. There's so many issues with it. I think, right. you know, you get distracted on which is the one you should be worried about.
Right. And then sort of the flip side of that parents, you know, at least should give some thought to is the role that social networking aspect is going to play in their children's future
from
a professional standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's the whole Joy Ito Guild in World of Warcraft to look at and the business connections that those people have forged. And, you know, as I understand it, that's a killer business networking environment.
Agree. I think that's why it's hard for us to judge, because it's going to be a new world. And, you know, a parent that says, don't be on MySpace is saying essentially, don't hang out with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. It goes on for all the way through school and into business.
Yeah. It really seems to me like, you know, our whole rubric today of having interviews and resumes and, you know, that's how you get yourself a position and how, you know, and then you work really hard and advance in your position. I think a lot of that is going to shift.
Just be my guild mate.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like speaking of like your professional life or getting into college or even getting into high school, I mean, now you hear about all these people who like private high schools who actually go on MySpace and will look and see if, you know, what kind of pictures the kids have posted or college, definitely. And I mean, you know, it's the same thing. And I don't know. It's
I had a brewski with my friends the other night and getting ready for the junior high school prom.
It's probably going to make it hard to get into that, you know, Groton. But I think that's a really good point. Gosh, that's the thing that I think is really important. And really, it's kind of in a way the premise of this podcast. This stuff is all so new. And we're all trying to figure this out right now.
Yeah.
And then there's no precedent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of depressing, huh?
Yeah. And basically, no matter what we do, we're screwed. But I think parents have learned this. This has been true over the generations. There's nothing you can do. You are your child's number one problem. Just might as well face it.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, you're going to mess them up.
Yeah.
You guys have young kids. You don't know that yet, but trust me, you'll believe that soon.
Yeah. And I think, too, about, you know, whether these considerations then, just to further complicate things, become different for boy children and girl children too.
Oh yeah, definitely. Absolutely. That's the case. Yeah.
The boys really need to be going outside and blowing off steam and getting that out of their system.
Fortunately, my son likes to, he's very physical and likes to skateboard. And he even says, oh dad, I'm sorry. I bet you wish you had a geek for a son. And I'm not a geek. And then I said, but Henry, you have a MySpace page. You play video games.
You watch videos on YouTube, far more video on YouTube than you watch on TV. And you're telling me you're not into computers? He said, no, I don't really use technology. And maybe for his peer group, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there still that stigma for being a geek? Like, is a geek still a nerd? Yeah. And that's what he's talking about.
Isn't that interesting? That's still around, I think.
Yeah.
That is. After all this time.
Geeks are still nerds.
And role models like you guys. And still, people think, oh, what a nerd.
So what other kinds of technology do you use in your parenting life?
Let's see. Technology in my parenting life. You know, I mean, really, that iPod in the car is...
That's a pretty good one.
Yeah. Like I said, I have a computer, a spare computer set up in our house that I have, you know, sort of earmarked for Tyler. But he hardly ever uses it. When we got home from that trip where the kids were all playing RuneScape, it was funny to see him go straight for that computer,
which
he doesn't think about, you know, ever. But because he'd seen all this role modeling of being on the computer by kids, he just beelined for the thing and wanted to jump on and play his Dora games and stuff.
Does he see mommy and daddy on the computer a lot? I mean, I know he sees you on your mixing board.
Yeah, no, he sees me on a lot, but I tend to do my computer stuff while he's engaged doing other things.
Okay.
Either I have help with him 2.5 days a week. So I try and get my work and computer related stuff done then. And so when I'm spending time with him, we're generally doing other things.
Because I wonder, you know, kids, of course, copy their parents. So if they see you on the computer a lot, they're going to do that.
What about a BlackBerry? Do you have a BlackBerry?
No. And in fact, our law firm, like many law firms, you know, rolled those out to all the attorneys and didn't, you know, say that you had to have one, but it was very much expected that you would have it. And I took it home with me for like a week and decided this is the most useless device. And I do not need something else to tote around with me in my life when I'm traveling and, you know, bringing a laptop and my phone, which I already had everything on. I ultimately decided that there was nothing I could do with a BlackBerry that I wasn't already doing on my phone, and I didn't need that just extra baggage.
Yeah, because I think that's like our generation's addiction, I think, the BlackBerry. And I think it's really funny when you hear parents complaining about their kids playing too many video games, and then let me check my BlackBerry for a second, you know, and then I'll finish my conversation. Because I think it's all about modeling, and I think there's so many parents of young kids that really use it all the time. And
I was so embarrassed. I walked into a wall the other day.
While you were reading your BlackBerry?
Yep.
Yeah, there was... I read...
It's really embarrassing. And you know that everybody who sees you is just like sniggering and going,
yeah,
idiot.
How do your kids feel about your BlackBerry, Liam?
Oh, they hate it.
Yeah.
They hate it. It's to them, it's their... In fact, any kind of technology, but BlackBerry particularly, and my laptops... are competition for them.
Mm-hmm.
They hate them.
Yeah, there was an article in I think it was the Washington Post called BlackBerry Orphans, and it was about how kids feel about their parents using the BlackBerry. And there were horrendous stories, like a woman who, what, you know, her family just said, you can't use it anymore. You cannot check it while we're eating dinner. And so she would excuse herself to go to the bathroom.
It's an addiction.
And, you know, and have her BlackBerry hidden, you know, behind the toilet so she could
Isn't
use
that
it.
Sad?
Or another mom whose kids flushed her BlackBerry down the toilet.
And my husband's got a Trio, and I gave it to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for him, it's actually great because it frees him from being at the office all the time. You know, I mean, he can be out and about. He can spend more time at home. He can spend more time with our son. And he's not so bad that he's excusing himself to go to the bathroom. He'll just, you know, check it periodically, and it enables him to make sure nothing's falling through the cracks while he's not there.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like I don't want any kind of email device that I can take around with me, just because I feel like having the freedom of working at home means I can go and spend time with kids. And so if I take my email with me, it's not really spending time with kids. But I'm sort of, I have a little bit of an addictive personality when it comes to technology. So that could just be me. You don't have to check it, even if you have it.
Oh, I do.
Until Twitter went through its thing with South by Southwest, where it just exploded, and all of a sudden there were just so many people on, I really kind of liked having that Twitter stream on my phone, because if I were, you know, somewhere stuck and just needed something to read and distract myself. It was fun to just sort of watch that stream by.
It's like carrying your community in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do, but it somehow doesn't scale well.
No. I was encountering Twitter ference where, you know, I would actually go and try and be dialing the phone and I couldn't punch in 7 numbers, you know, before I'd get an alert that I'd gotten another IM.
You need to reduce the number of friends you have.
Yes.
Clearly that's the problem. And Scoble and Weiner, just, you know, forget them. Just take them right off there.
Right.
That was when I finally said I threw in the towel. And you're right. It was right about South by Southwest.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys have, how old is, it's Annabella?
That's mm-hmm. Yeah, she just turned 4, and then I have twin boys who just turned 2.
Right. So Leo Henry is how old?
He's 12, and then I have a 15-year-old daughter.
Right.
Who babysits my 4-year-old.
Yeah.
Oh, how fun.
It's full circle. And her husband teaches high school where my daughter goes.
So Leo, without subjecting your family to subpoenas.
They've had it all, baby. They have no privacy. No,
I'm just curious because it seems to me like Apple with iTunes has really accomplished something that, you know, millions of dollars of lawsuits and propaganda have not been able to accomplish. I don't know any young kids who are interested in going and illegally downloading music.
They keep asking me if they can download LimeWire. And had iTunes not been around, I would have been in a much more difficult position. But mm-hmm. what I did was I said, no, you may not. And it's not merely for the moral and ethical reasons. It's also because, you know, there's all sorts of scary things you can get on LimeWire by accident. But a great deal of it's because I wanted to set a moral tone. And mm-hmm. I said, but I'm going to give you $20. This is to my teenage daughter. I'm going to give you $20 a month allowance on iTunes. Mm-hmm. So she basically can buy 20 songs or 2 CDs a month, which I think is a very fair allowance for a 15-year-old. And I think sometimes it comes up that there are songs that she wants. She started to get very eclectic tastes. This has worked well, by the way. She is musically very much more sophisticated than I ever was at her age. Mm-hmm. Much more eclectic. And occasionally she'll come up with something that just isn't on iTunes. And at that point, I say, you know, if you can't find it on iTunes, I don't think she's ever set foot in a record store. Mm-hmm. And we don't really have a great record store in town.
No,
I say,
well,
you can download it then. But I think she gets the idea that there's a difference and it's always preferable to buy it. And I think that's kind of where I'd like to be with her.
The other thing I think is fascinating, in addition to the iTunes phenomenon, is the whole Creative Commons phenomenon and how there's so much music that's out there.
Well, that's right.
And available that, you know, you can feel good about downloading. Right. The artists want you to download.
Right. And I'd really like to steer it toward the Magnatunes of the world and e-music. And this new thing, We7, that Peter Gabriel's doing is kind of intriguing. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, by the time she's in college, the whole landscape will have completely shifted.
Yeah.
And she's really at the transitional generation, I think. She's kind of the last person for whom DRM and will even be meaningful. You know, will have any meaning at all. I hope. I pray.
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, I think that we're probably right now, I think the walls are starting to fall. We're right at the storming of the Bastille. I think that was May 1st, was it? That was the storming of the Bastille on the beginning of the end.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah. We're talking about the dig thing. You're going to do a This Week in Law on that, which is great.
Yeah, we are.
I look forward to that. I can't wait to hear it, in fact, because the legal issues are fascinating.
Yep. And just, you know, the legal issues are one thing, but then the law can be whatever the law is. But when you've got, 850,000 already sites that have posted that code and counting.
Yeah.
You know, Cory Doctorow pointed out on Boing Boing that there's this vast avalanche of people who know how to crack HD DVD, who, you know, vastly outnumber the volume of people who actually own the device.
And ironically, I have an HD DVD and I have no desire to crack it, but I have that code. I have that number. The files are too big. Even if I could crack it, I'm not going to, what am I going to do? Carry around an 8 GB.
Movie? And I mean, the number of people who have the numbers, it far exceeds the people who have the technical capacity
ability
to do it. Even, but that is interesting that even have the technology that they would do it. And that's
but the
crazy.
Number is a flag. It's a symbol. It has nothing to do with cracking AACS. It has everything to do with standing up and saying, you can't, you know, we're not going to take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it was very exciting and very interesting to watch that happen.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of kids probably were involved in
all kids.
Posting that to Dig or posting it independently of Dig. And, you know, they're all potentially exposing themselves or their families to liability. But, you know, how does that really make any practical impact when you think about what they'd have to do to pursue it?
Well, and I also think it may be the first political statement for many of these kids. The the first time they even thought about politics.
And they can do it from their bedroom.
Yeah. But I think that that's significant. You know, I when I was in high school, it was during the Vietnam era. And I remember protesting. And I probably didn't, you know, I tried to, but I probably didn't understand the issues. But it politicized me. It made me interested in this stuff. And I think if nothing else, that you could say that would be the benefit of this, is that their awareness has been raised. And the notion that as an individual, they can do something, that they can participate. I think that's very, very valuable. Even if their parents do get sued. I posted it right away. I mean, on my Tumble log. But I just think it's not about the number. It's kind of more about making a statement, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. For the kids, for sure.
Yeah.
Did you talk to your kids about it?
No, it's funny. My kids have no clue.
Yeah. I mean, we think this is just like about the most important news that has ever hit, you know, Earth. And really, you walk out on the street or pretty much anywhere and they're just like, what number? HD what?
Probably should mention for those who are listening saying, what are they talking about? Why don't I know? That we're just talking about the key code that allows you to decrypt, to remove the copy protection from high def disks. And this number, which the company that owns this technology, AACS, claims that distributing this number is circumventing their copy protection, which is, of course, illegal under the DMCA, and sent a takedown notice to Kevin Rose at Digg and said, you know, this number is up on your site, take it down. Kevin responded, I think, as anybody would, as I would have, by taking it down immediately. But what happened was 15,000 other Digg users, mostly kids, I'm sure mostly people under 21, immediately posted the number again and again and again. And Kevin finally threw in the towel and said, well, there's nothing we can do.
Yeah.
I mean, they sent the same letter to Google, right? I mean, because for blog, because people were posting it on their Blogspot blogs.
First people I thought, oh, God, it was Blogspot. Yeah.
Yeah. Corey had that on Boing Boing, that his class blog at USC. So one of the students had posted it there a while ago now. And Google got, it's interesting. It's not a DMCA takedown notice that these people are sending, because it's not that part of the DMCA that's being implicated. That's the copyright infringement portion where you go through this. Is it up? Is it down? You know, we posted it. They took it down. We're putting it back up. All that, you know, notice and takedown portion of the statute is under Section 512. This is under Section 1201, which deals with breaking copy protection and DRM, the anti-circumvention provisions. And all that AACS is sending out is a demand letter, which basically just says, you know, this is in violation of the DMCA. Please remove it. So you're not getting into that whole ISP safe harbor thing that goes on.
That's good news for Kevin. Mm-hmm. It doesn't jeopardize his safe harbor protection.
No, it's completely unrelated to it because no copyright infringement involved here.
Got it. I think that's commonly misunderstood.
I think it's really commonly misunderstood that as soon as you hear DMCA, you start to think about, you know, Google and YouTube and the kind of thing that you generally hear about in that context. This is different. This is just a demand letter. Demand letters are kind of a dime a dozen in the legal world. You know, the first thing that anybody does when they think, you know, in the back of their mind, they think they might be contemplating a lawsuit, or even if they're not really seriously contemplating a lawsuit, but maybe they might have some foundation to do so. They might just throw out a demand letter to see if you'll capitulate. There's a website called chillingeffects.org that is all about that. That is just a repository of demand letters. Some of them meritorious, many of them not. That kind of points out the prevalence of this practice, of this shot across the bow before any litigation ensues. And it's actually, you know, a perfectly valid strategy. There's nothing really wrong with sending a demand letter. It might eliminate the need for litigation that's expensive and time consuming and awful for everyone that's involved in it. But too often they're used for intimidation and strong arming, because it's, you know, as soon as you receive a demand letter, like you were saying, Leo, you know, your immediate reaction is, I don't want to have anything to do with that.
Right, right.
So that's why chilling effects exists, is it was a way to give people a place to put their demand letters. And actually, what it's a project of the legal clinics at Stanford, Harvard, and Bolthald at Berkeley, I believe. And they actually get students at the clinics to go in and look at some of these letters and annotate them and say, okay, this is a valid point. Okay, this is completely blowing hot air.
Oh, great.
So that you can see, you know, if somebody's making overarching statements or misstating the law, they give you a lot of guidance on that.
That's great. That's good to know. Next time I get a demand letter, I'll make sure I post it.
Yeah, you've got to post it. And the good news is, well, there's no good news in getting a demand letter, but you can go there and you can often find similar demand letters to the ones you've received, and you can look at them and sort of gauge whether you need to be really, really concerned or not.
It raises an interesting point that, getting back to kids, our kids are growing up in an age that is very much in flux in terms of, well, we've talked about it already, not only mores and what's okay and what's not okay, but even the law, ethics, it's all up for grabs. And as we start getting into a biotech era, they're going to be dealing with things that are just amazing. Oh, I hear Tyler at the door.
Yeah, you sure do.
Do you want to run?
Yeah. Hello, everyone.
Time for the babysitter to leave.
You want to bring him in and have him say hi to us?
Sure. Hold on just a sec.
And coming up, Tyler.
Tyler, the future. Don't you think that's going to be an issue, though? I mean, our kids are growing up. That's, I guess, really what I was kind of getting at, is we as parents have no idea what the world is going to be like that they're growing up in.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's not going to be my space.
Say hi into the microphone.
Hi.
Hi, Tyler.
Hi, Megan. Hi, Leo.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Tyler.
That always sounds so cute.
We're doing a podcast, Tyler. Yeah, we're doing a podcast. You know how you told me how you want to have your own podcast?
Here's your chance. You could be on the Twit Network.
Yeah. Okay, Mommy's got about a few minutes to wrap up here. Can you go see Auntie for just a few minutes and I'll come out and play?
We'll get you off right away.
Okay, I'll be right back. Let me close the door.
Yeah, that's adorable.
Oh.
I have a feeling the first but not the last time our podcast will be interviewed
by a child.
Yeah. Interrupted by kids.
Yeah, I'm surprised I cannot get my children to say hi into any kind of device.
Microphones? Yeah. No. Abby's just discovered the microphone, my 15-year-old, and now she wants to do commercials. She sat here. I've got a video of her recording. She found a copy and she started reading it, and she loved it. Because she can hear her own
we
voice.
We could interview. We should interview her.
She wants to be on the podcast. I forgot to tell you.
Okay.
So, yeah. She would very much like to talk about the teenage perspective.
I would like to hear it. She sometimes tells me when I ask. We've been discussing these things for a few years. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. You probably know more about her inner life than I do.
No. I don't.
Certainly her tech life.
Well, thank you, Denise, for enlightening
you're
us.
One of the things that I just had on my mind before we go is we were talking about the DMCA and how many, you know, I don't have a good feeling on whether kids think it's cool to have a blog or not these days. You know, I mean, I don't know if that's
a live journal, maybe for some kids.
I don't know. I don't know.
It's a minority.
It sort of seems like blogging came and went with.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, if you have your MySpace page, what else do you need?
That's a blog.
You
know? Right. Yeah.
Right.
But Henry's loves his.
The one thing that bloggers never think about doing that they really should think about if they're posting any sort of third-party material at all is complying with the part of the DMCA that allows you to use the safe harbor. If somebody comes along and posts a comment or posts some copyrighted thing that you're totally unresponsible for, you know, somebody has come along and done this on your site, it's really nice to be able to invoke that safe harbor provision, but there are some hoops that you have to jump through to do it. So that's something for parents to think about.
Where would we find out about those hoops?
Wikipedia has a pretty good description. If you look for Wikipedia DMCA safe harbor.
Okay.
You know, if you search that in Google, you'll get to the section that
talks about
that.
That's good. I probably should look at that. You put it in the terms of service.
Yeah, you exactly. And there's you actually have to designate an agent where if somebody has a complaint under the DMCA, you know, and the agent can be you, you just have to, you know,
how
have
to
a
get
person
a
identified
right.
and
right.
a, and an address, right. and then you register that with the Copyright Office. And then, you know, you're pretty much in the clear. Another really great resource for practical advice of that nature is the EFF Blogging Legal Guide, which also has a whole section on blogging and students.
Mm. Good to know.
That takes on some of the free speech things that can come into play, or, you know, if your kids are slamming their teachers on their own blogs or on a school blog or...
Well, we should talk about that sometime. I have to come, have you come back and talk about the legal ramifications of that, because that's a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
Well, I'd be happy to.
Good. You can catch Denise in many different venues. Of course, her logarithms column is at ZDNet.com and really fascinating, part of their blogs section. And of course, her own bags and bag and baggage is at bgbg.blogspot.com if you'd like to read that. And of course, she does a number of podcasts, including This Week in Law, which is heard on the Twit Network whenever Leo gets off his duff and puts it out. And we're looking forward to the one. It'll probably come out kind of at the same time as this one on this dig issue. That'll be fascinating.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Megan, great to meet you.
Oh,
finally.
Nice to meet you.
I've been a huge fan since your Tech TV days. So.
Oh, thanks.
She's the greatest. She really is. So nice we could have you on, Denise. I'm going to extend this offer to you. We're doing Twit this afternoon at 4, and we are going to talk about, obviously, dig. I've got a comment from Kevin. If you wanted to join us, that would be great, but I know you're probably busy.
Yeah, you're going to record at 4 until about 5?
Yeah. If you show up on Skype, I'll dial you in.
Okay, great.
And it could be for 5 minutes. It's not, but honestly, no, just I'll keep my eye peeled for you.
I'm sure Tyler has a thing or two to say about it.
Yeah,
well,
let's get
Tyler on. Effect too.
He has a scheduled actually during that time frame. He wants to go to a kid's yoga class.
Oh, how sweet. Oh my, he thought this up? That's impressive.
Yes, mommy's always running off to go to yoga, so he keeps asking me, can we?
Oh,
can I go
that's with? So adorable.
They actually have these classes where you can bring your kids.
I'm impressed, Denise. You really seem like you've got a very balanced life, which is great.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I try.
Yeah, seems like it. Thank you, Denise.
All right, it's a pleasure.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
And that's Denise Howell, and it's another Jumping Monkey production.
Yeah.
You know, and the TV shows, at the end of the TV shows where they have the thing, you know, like the dog and the guy walking out the door or whatever, we should have a little... This has been a Jumping Monkeys production.
There was something at the end of The Simpsons. Like, oh, it goes, I made this. That was at the end of The Simpsons, yeah. I think, yeah. So, I made this.
I think we should have something like that. But until then, we're just going to play Paul Minshall's music and wish you a wonderful day. And we will see you next week.
Yep.
On Jumpin' Monkeys.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Megan Maloney. Bye-bye.
I made this.
Jumpin' Monkeys.